I truly think that if we do this right, we have an incredible opportunity to not just dig out of this crisis, but to fundamentally transform the country.
What?
So that it's more fair, more just.
What?
More equitable for everybody.
Did he just say what I thought he said? Did Joe Biden just say...
fundamentally transforming the United States of America.
Oh my, he did, didn't he? Well, well, well. Hello there, and welcome into this Tuesday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this usually daily hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. Hoping you're having a good one, that Monday was good to you, and that you're looking forward to a good Tuesday. It is the Tuesday, 14th of July edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast, and in my neighborhood, everything's pretty good. I mean, it's summertime. We have the afternoon heat buildup. The humidity is insane. That's normal. And we have showers every afternoon, whether we want them or not. We have stuff going on every afternoon. If you have plans here in this part of the country, you make sure that you plan a nap at some point in the afternoon, because you're not going to do anything outdoors, including mowing your grass. It's funny that when we have these times where there is a rare day without rain, if you step outside, shut everything off, and listen closely, you hear this 360 degree audio panorama of lawnmowers. People mowing their grass everywhere. That's just how it is this time of the year. Why? Because when it's not raining, it's time to mow the grass, which explains why my lawn is waving at the neighbors. Hi. Yeah, it's getting kind of tall. And that's because I've been spending that time working on the car. I've told you about the Miata project. Yeah, I won't bore you with that. It's at a point now where I'm waiting. I am going to bore you with that. I'm waiting for parts to come in. And every time... I told my buddy Mike this the other day, I think yesterday, I told him, I have to laugh because every time I work on something on this car, I find other things that need to be fixed. So this is typical for me. Guys, is this the way it is for you? Like, your wife asks you to do something around the house. Hey, can you vacuum for me? Sure, baby, not a problem. And you have to fix the vacuum before you can actually use it? Or... hey, can you go put that in the dishwasher and get it started for me? And you start the dishwasher and it makes a weird noise, and you dig into it and find out you've got to go to the hardware store and replace parts or whatever. Or something else, okay? Insert task here. But you've got to fix whatever you're going to use for the task. And it happens. I realize that sometimes the vacuuming and the dishwasher thing may be ploys by your wife to get you to realize something needs to be fixed that she's probably told you about half a dozen times, and you've just said, yeah, got it. And you haven't done anything, right? But those things that are your purview, those things that are your thing, you know, like mowing the grass, you get out there with a lawnmower, and it seems like every time you use the lawnmower, you use the weed trimmer, you use the blower, you use the edger or whatever, you're going to spend the first 15 to 20 minutes, maybe half an hour, with that particular power tool fixing it or changing a blade or changing the chain on the chainsaw or sharpening something. You're going to be doing that before you can do anything else. That's just how life is, especially for us guys. And that's how it is when I'm working on this car. Every time I turn around, there's something else that needs to be fixed. So, there's real quick, just a real quick thing. This is the latest little set of dominoes which has started to fall, and that is something completely unexpected, okay? I knew I needed to replace one of those little accordion, you know, accordion-looking rubber boots on the power steering rack because it was split, and a lot of dirt was getting in there, and there's grease that attracts dirt and stuff like, and dirt gets in there and things start grinding and it just destroys parts. So that's why there's a big rubber boot on there, because there's a universal joint that has to be protected and it's all split. So I think, well, that's part of the list. So I order a boot that is supposed to fit this car. You see, I use the word supposed, right? Okay, so I get under the car to replace the boot. And part of that process is taking what's called a tie rod end off of that arm. It is this is what links this particular rod to the wheel, so that when you turn the steering wheel, it moves the wheels back and forth, okay? So you can turn. Well, the tie rod end, I notice as I put a hand on it to get it off, I notice, oh no, it's shot. It's got a big rubber, it's got a rubber part that holds grease. Like the boot on the steering arm, it's also split. Oh, that's just awesome. That's great. And I take my flashlight and shine it over on the other side. The other side is too. It's shot. Great. So I take it off. I get the process started for putting the boot on, which, by the way, I gave up on the other day because it was just such a beast. I couldn't get it to go because it's so stinking tight. I finally figured out a way to get it on. I just stretched it into submission. But in the process, I started looking around. And I noticed that the ball joints on both sides, I'm not going to bore you with that. They're just other parts that are built the same way as the tie rod end. They're also shot. So there's two of those on each side, and there's a tie rod end on each side, and they've all got to be replaced. Amazon's getting some money from me, and they should be here by the end of the week. But yikes, people. It's just, I'm afraid to look at the back, and I know I have to, because, you know, if you know something's wrong, you've got to fix it. I know I have to. I'm scared to. I told my buddy Mike, I bet the bushings are shot. I bet everything in there, if it's made of any kind of rubber, it's shot by now. It's a 30-year-old car. I don't know when the last time was anybody replaced anything. I mean, I looked at, they're the same kind of little accordion-style boots on the shock absorbers, or the struts. And I looked up at the top, and, oh, no, they're split, too. So there's no telling what all has to be replaced that is over the years just decided to disintegrate on this car. And at some point, I'm going to have to draw the line and say, that's it. I'm just not doing it anymore. I just, you know, and I don't want to because I want it all to be perfect. I want it all to be right, but it's driving me nuts. Anyway, that's yesterday. So yesterday, back to this. Yesterday, I got it put on. I'm looking around. I find other things to occupy myself, because right now, like I said, I'm waiting for parts. When these parts come in, I can really get back to the substantive work. The initial idea, the whole concept for this project was to go in and replace a part that I thought was probably allowing oil to get into the engine. Well, that's been done, but I can't put the engine back together until other parts come in, which have, in the snowball effect, been discovered to be broken or non-functional, or, ooh, that's a bit sketchy. So I'm waiting now for parts to come in so I can finish the project. And I really, 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 really hope I can get this done by the end of this week, because I'd really like to be able to take the little car out this weekend. And I got to be honest with you, if it still blows smoke at the end of this week, I'm just going to ignore it. But that's my life. So how are you? You good? Everything all right? Well, good. I hope so. Things are going well here in our little neighborhood. I was just looking at social media in the run-up here while the pre-show music was playing. And I spotted something that a buddy of mine, a girl that used to do some work. I mean, when I was working as the director of technology at SDEA, one of my responsibilities was for major events. I was the person responsible for screen content, for organizing and displaying stuff on the big screens, the jumbotrons and things like that. And when you have more than one facility, as we did in the January winter conference season, we would have three different facilities. We'd have 15,000 students spread out in three different places, divided up and into different places. And one of my responsibilities was to make sure that the screen content was all there, that the bands who were leading worship before the conference sessions would begin, that their lyrics were all on the screen and et cetera. So I couldn't do that by myself. I had a team, usually these volunteer girls who would come in, and they would sit there and they would wear their headphones and listen, and they could talk with the video director and let them know, okay, I'm coming up here, I've got a video to roll, this sort of a thing. And that was my responsibility. And one of the girls, Shannon, is a friend on Facebook, and she works in conjunction, does some things with the Alabama Republican Party. And she posted something today, which is something that's on display at every polling place in the state of Alabama. It's just a little sign that they stick up with some scotch tape, and it's your rights as a voter. And there are 5 points here. I just want to share these 5 points with you because I think this is important. Because Alabama is a voter ID state, okay? And you remember that the anti-voter ID crusaders are saying that we're disenfranchising people, that we are preventing their vote from counting, that we're not allowing them to be represented by requiring an ID to vote. Now, it doesn't matter that those very same people have to provide an ID to do dozens of other things in their lives. So it's not an inconvenience. They have identification. They have exactly what they need to present at the polls. But somehow we're disenfranchising these people at the polls by requiring identification. Now, to those who have a brain or even just a couple of gray cells that can spark, it's obvious that this objection is in place because it prevents fraudulent voting. And fraudulent voting is necessary to the Democrat cause. But you have rights in each state. And here in Alabama, these rights are posted at the polling place. One, if you are a qualified voter, you have the right to vote without being intimidated, threatened, or coerced by any other person. Two, if your name is not on the poll list. By the way, I don't know if it's this way where you live, where you vote. I'm in Alabama, have been all my life. When you present yourself at the polls, you present your ID. They ask for your ID. They look for your name on the polling list, on the poll list, and they match you up. And then you acknowledge that they actually have a screen, touch screen set up, and you acknowledge, you sign off. You register, you check in, and you go vote. You sit down with a ballot and you vote. If your name is not on the poll list, ask the poll officials to call the Board of Registrars to verify your registration. If they're unable to confirm that you are eligible to vote, request a provisional ballot. So, even if your name isn't on the list, they are prepared to pick up a phone and call someone to find your name in the system. If it's not on their paper list, they have these books of lists, and they flip through them and they search and they find your name. If your name's not in there, for whatever reason, like if you just moved there or whatever, then they can pick up a phone, and they're prepared to call someone and do a quick search to find you, because you may have been registered after all of this was printed. You see? And if they don't find it, if it's for some reason there's been a hitch in the system, you can say, hey, can you just give me a provisional ballot? And you can still vote with a provisional ballot. They will take your provisional ballot. They will verify your qualifications to vote. Your vote will count. If you vote a provisional ballot, ask for information on how to learn after the election whether your vote was counted. There is a way to determine whether or not your vote actually was counted in the election. Ask for that information. They will happily give it to you. If you require assistance, this is the final point, you may ask for help from any person with these exceptions. You may not be assisted by your employer or his agent, and you may not be assisted by an officer of your union or his agent. So if you need help, if your wife or your hubby is in the next little cubicle, you can lean over and say, hey, what is this one about? Because there are always provisions. There are always things on the ballot. You're going, wait a minute, I didn't hear about this amendment. What's this about? So you can ask someone, as long as it's not your employer, and there are legal reasons for that, and it's not an officer of your union or an agent of the union of any kind, because the unions have been involved in swaying elections. So you see, you do have rights as a voter. And this is important because today there are runoff elections and things like that happening. There's one happening here. But you need to know, nobody's vote is being disenfranchised. That's a lie. Nobody is being kept from having a vote counted in an election. That's a lie. There are always provisions and always ways to make the vote count. Don't believe anything else. Coming soon to a baseball stadium near you, A Night of Hope, featuring Grammy nominee and Dove Award winner Crowder.
So lay down your burdens, lay down your shame. Oh, I'm broken. Lift up your face.
Plus, Grammy nominee and Dove Award winner Tauren Wells.
Oh, on the mountains I will bow my life to the one who set me there. In the valley I will lift my eyes to the one who sees me there.
And a special message of hope for a world in confusion and fear from Scott Dawson. A Night of Hope, coming to Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, Sevierville, Tennessee, Montgomery, Madison, and Birmingham, Alabama. For ticket information and more, go to nightofhopetour.com and be there for A Night of Hope.
I know I am not alone.
It's the Tuesday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Hi there. Good to have you along today. I stuck that last one in there just because I did it yesterday. Oh, man. Because, you know, I also produced the Scott Dawson Now podcast, and they're doing this thing, Oklahoma City, Sevierville, Tennessee, several places in Alabama. And he said, hey, can you put a spot for me together for me? I said, sure. So that was that. It's a, let's see, it's kind of a sad day in the neighborhood for fans of Mythbusters. Do you remember the Mythbusters TV show? They had a crew on there, a good crew. They had, Jamie and Adam, who were the head guys, and then they had the team, Tori, Grant, and now her name is just gone from my head anyway. But Grant Imahara, 49 years of age, passed away. It's very, very sad. I read earlier this morning about it, and I liked Grant. He was a roboticist. He was an engineer. He built crazy things. When it came to designing mechanical things to do the myth busting, Grant was the guy they turned to. And it's just very sad. It's very sad. Adam Savage said yesterday, I'm at a loss, no words. I've been a part of two big families with Grant Imahara over the last 22 years. Grant was a truly brilliant engineer, artist, and performer, but also just such a generous, easygoing, and gentle person. Working with Grant was so much fun. I'll miss my friend. So, it's Carrie Byron is the one I was trying to think of. It's a sad day. And the thing is that I think I'm sad because, not because Grant was a TV star. He was just this guy, you know? He was just a guy who was an engineer, was talented, and he lent his talents to this show that was interesting to a lot of us nerds, and I proudly wear the nerd badge. I enjoyed Mythbusters, and from time to time, we'll watch Adam Savage's YouTube videos. I don't agree with Adam Savage politically at all, but I do appreciate his passion and his attention to detail and the way he builds things. It kind of inspires me to get my hands back into things again. But sad day, Grant Imahara is no longer with us. Just just a sad day. Well, it's also a sad day for a district attorney in Atlanta, Georgia. An ongoing criminal investigation into Fulton County District Attorney Paul Howard. This is the same prosecutor who charged the officers responsible for the death of Rayshard Brooks recently widened and now includes his actions involving the Brooks case. Now, we talked about this before. He was under investigation for a couple of things already. He's been investigated for other things before. So what we can take from that essentially is that this guy's kind of a shady character to begin with. And now there are other questions. The Georgia Bureau of Investigation Director, Vic Reynolds, confirmed to Law.com last week that a criminal investigation into Howard now includes grand jury subpoenas. Subpoenas he issued in the Brooks case, despite the fact that the grand jury had not been impaneled since March 13 due to the coronavirus pandemic. Howard attempted to subpoena records related to a use of force investigation against former Atlanta police officer Garrett Roth, whom Howard charged with felony murder in the Brooks case. Now, you remember that this attorney general charged this police officer with felony murder, which is so beyond the pale, it's ludicrous. It's insane. And everybody at the time said, wow, that's crazy. And it was obvious to me, and probably to you as well, that it was a political stunt, especially when you consider the fact that he's in a runoff election, he's facing stiff competition, he's been under investigation before, and he's desperate to hold on to his office. Here's more from Law.com. Howard told the Daily Report on Wednesday his office proactively sent grand jury subpoenas in the hopes that a grand jury would convene once the current statewide judicial emergency expires. Earlier this week, the Chief Justice announced he will extend the judicial emergency and continue grand jury suspensions through August 12th. On Thursday, Howard issued a second statement blaming the investigator who sent the subpoena for Roth's police record, saying he was under the impression that the March-April grand jury was still empaneled, even though it had been discharged. Howard said his staff will suspend issuing future grand jury subpoenas until grand juries are empaneled, and that he has withdrawn the subpoena seeking Roth's records. Now, ask yourself this question. If you are the district attorney, don't you know when and when not a grand jury is actually empaneled? Of course you do. It's part of your everyday job. That situational awareness is part of what you do. You know that. And so, he blamed an investigator. If you're an investigator, here's another question, working in this particular realm, don't you know when a grand jury is empaneled or not? Of course you do. It's part of your situational awareness in that job. So who's lying? Any guesses besides Attorney Paul Howard are incorrect. Gabriel Sino, a law professor at Georgia State University, told WAGA-TV, Howard's alleged actions have both ethical and potentially criminal implications. He explained, it would be a violation of criminal law to make a knowingly false statement or misrepresentation in the subpoena, which is a document that has been issued. According to Sino, the prosecutorial misconduct could result in the high-profile Brooks case being dismissed. The expanded investigation into Howard reportedly came at the request of Georgia Attorney General Chris Carr. According to WAGA, the GBI was already investigating Howard for a mysterious salary supplement negotiated between Howard and former Atlanta Mayor Kasim Reed. The case reportedly focuses on payments made to a nonprofit organization run by Howard that he allegedly used to supplement his salary. So, appearances are that this guy is a crook, that he is a con artist. Yeah, I think so. Now, let's go back to a statement from Mr. Chino here, or Chino, however. He says prosecutorial misconduct could result in the high-profile Brooks case being dismissed. Well, on one hand, you're thinking, well, good, it should be dismissed. And you would not be wrong. On the other hand, what if Fulton County District Attorney Paul Howard knows he has no case? What if all of his legal honchos around him are saying, you can't make that charge stick, it's going to get you tanked? What if he did this with dismissal in mind to rescue himself from embarrassment? Yeah, there would still be a level of embarrassment if the general public found out about this particular story. But do you think they will? Will it be covered on CNN, NBC, MSNBC? No, it won't. Not a chance. It's just one of those little things that makes you go, Just something to think about. Regardless, he's a con artist. He's overstepped his boundaries because he's desperate to keep his job. Oh my. Welcome back to this Tuesday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Now I'm going to have to watch Guardians of the Galaxy again. What a great soundtrack. Oh, man. And it occurs to me, when I was talking about having to work on everything before I can do anything, that some might have thought, well, why don't you maintain your stuff? I mean, take a little time and work on your stuff. I mean, just do that.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
Yeah, I really don't. I have other things to do. You know, TV, naps, such as that. It's a Tuesday. It's the 14th day of July 2020. And Bubba Wallace is still trying to play the race card. And he has quadrupled down. He says some of his fans aren't forgiving him. Some race fans are not forgiving him. Why? Well, in an effort to endear himself to NASCAR fans everywhere, he says the reason they're not forgiving him is because they're simple-minded. Ladies and gentlemen, I suggest that what you do from now on, henceforth, is to check in every weekend and see how far back in the pack Bubba Wallace finishes. Because it should just be entertaining. This guy has decided he's going to get some publicity. Any publicity, even negative publicity, is good publicity. Well, let's just pay attention to see how good this guy really is. I think over the weekend, he came in 26th. It is just something to think about. Just something to keep on your mind. Bless his heart. Well, Ghislaine Maxwell is, I saw this morning, they're moving her around, putting her in different cells, keeping a close eye on her. They're doing much more to protect her than they did Jeffrey Epstein, because we all know what happened to Jeffrey Epstein, didn't commit suicide, and they're making sure the same thing doesn't happen, committing suicide, to her, because she knows things that we need to know. Well, when the FBI agent showed up at her secluded New Hampshire estate to arrest her, she ran into another room. She forced agents to break through the front door to get to her. Now, this is all important because right now she's trying to get out of jail. She's trying to get released on bail. The problem with that is that she spent about a year hiding from the authorities. Moving from place to place. You got to remember, she's got a lot of money. She's extremely wealthy. She also has more than one citizenship, One of those citizenships is in France, where they don't allow extradition of their citizens. That's just something to remember. She's a British socialite living. She was living on $1 million property she bought via an anonymous limited liability company, had a cell phone wrapped in tinfoil, apparently, to avoid it being tracked. She also had round-the-clock security made up of former UK military personnel who fetched things for her using a credit card issued by that LLC. Those are just some of the measures federal prosecutors say 58-year-old Maxwell took to hide from law enforcement when she was arrested on the second day of July on sex trafficking charges linked to her association with disgraced financier Jeffrey Epstein. In a court filing on Monday, yesterday, the government cited those details in its fight to keep Maxwell locked up before her trial, saying she's spent the last year hiding from law enforcement and has access to extraordinary financial resources that would allow her to flee the country if she is freed. A federal judge today will consider whether to grant Maxwell's request to be released from a Brooklyn, New York lockup on $5 million bond to live under house arrest until her trial. Her defense team argued for her release, citing her long ties to the United States, where she has lived for decades. But prosecutors reiterated yesterday that the daughter of British publishing magnate Robert Maxwell remains a high risk to flee the country to avoid prison. In its filing, the prosecutors say she has demonstrated her ability to evade detection, and the victims of the defendant's crimes seek her detention. Because there's no set of conditions short of incarceration that can reasonably assure the defendant's appearance, the government urges the court to detain her. If she flees to France, where she also has citizenship, Maxwell would not be sent back to the United States for trial because the country doesn't extradite its citizens to the U.S. for prosecution. The government also argued Maxwell has been hiding from authorities, living in a secluded 156-acre estate in Bradford, New Hampshire, since late last year. She is accused of luring girls as young as 14 for sexual encounters with Epstein and engaging in some of the abuse. Prosecutors argued she could face as long as 35 years in prison if she's convicted. And we are all familiar with the Epstein case. Now, after a search of the home, agents found the cell phone on a desk with the tinfoil wrapping prosecutors called a misguided effort to evade detection. Not by the press or public, which of course would have no ability to trace her phone or intercept her communications, but by law enforcement. A security guard for Maxwell later told agents her brother had hired former members of the British military to guard her around the clock. Maxwell provided one of the guards with a credit card issued in the name of the same limited liability company that bought the New Hampshire home in cash last year. Cash. 156-acre place. Paid cash for it. The guard said Maxwell hadn't left the property during this time, working for her, saying she directed him to buy things for the estate. The prosecutors are saying that these facts make plain that there should be no question that she is skilled at living in hiding. But we did find her, and she did try to escape when we found her. And I agree. I agree that she should be kept in confinement. I agree that she is a flight risk. And I think anybody with a brain thinks so. Now, if you want to get emotional and you want to get all touchy-feely about it, you might find some rationale for allowing her to go sit in a house somewhere instead of in jail. But when you consider the facts that she has been up until just now successfully hiding, that she has incredible financial resources and can buy her way into and out of pretty much anything she needs to. She just paid cash for the 156-acre property, an expensive one. She has contacts literally around the world who will help her. She also has citizenship in France, where she knows she can go and as a citizen be protected from being brought back here. And with her cash, she could do it, and nobody would be the wiser that she did. So it really doesn't matter what kind of surveillance she's put under if she's allowed out of jail. She could disappear like a puff of smoke one day, and we would never know anything more about what actually happened. And in case you're not aware, I was talking to my wife about this the other night. She was watching some video about Epstein and about Maxwell, and she was getting angrier and angrier as she watched, because she's just now becoming familiar with this. And that's because the vast majority of people are just going, oh yeah, bad person. Yeah, I heard there were bad people. They don't really know that much about what's going on. And I told her, it's not just about Epstein and Maxwell. There are more people involved. And her response was, oh. And then I told her, Bill Clinton was on his plane dozens of times, been to his private island. There are people who have been on that island who've gone there to do work on that island, who've testified about bizarre things going on that island. There are many people who have testified that they were recruited by Maxwell and abused by Epstein, and other people whose names we would probably know. And there are a lot of people who want Ghislaine Maxwell silenced, because they know that if she actually does have video of things that went on, that they will be exposed as being the same kind of low-life creep Epstein was. And some of these people are on the weekend talking head shows every weekend. Some of these people are known for making your favorite movies. Some of these people have starred in your favorite movies. Some of these people are probably on the evening news every day. And once their names are known, once it is revealed what they were actually involved with, everything about them will be destroyed. And these are rich, powerful people. People who want to make sure that this woman never talks. And there are many who believe that's why Jeffrey Epstein is dead today. I joke around by saying these are things that make you say, hmm. There's a lot about Epstein and those who surround him which inspire that same thing. There's a lot about him, his activities, the people he knew. There's a lot. And when it comes to Ghislaine Maxwell, she is someone who didn't fall far from the tree. Her father was also a bit of an intelligence gatherer. And she learned a lot from him, apparently. She learned about taking notes, recording audio and video, about creating files on people that could become important later. And there are a lot of people who know about this, not just here, but in other countries as well. And they know that if you eventually find out what she knows, their lives, their careers, their fortunes will vanish. Everything that they hold dear will blow away in the wind. And that is why it's so important to make sure that Ghislaine Maxwell is protected, kept safe, and not allowed to walk out of that jail until she appears in court. Because there are those who don't want that day to happen. And it's important for us to find out exactly who those people are and what they've been up to. And she can give us that information. Trust me, my friend. These high-profile people are dirty in more ways than you can possibly imagine. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective Podcast, diving into the final segment for this Tuesday, the 14th day of July, 2020. Oh, yeah. You remember at the top of the podcast, I dropped this little piece of audio.
I truly think that if we do this right, we have an incredible opportunity to not just dig out of this crisis, but to fundamentally transform the country so that it's more fair, more just, more equitable for everybody.
Joe Biden is dropping little crumbs, I should say. He's not dog whistling, because dog whistling is something most people can't hear. He's actually dropping little crumbs for the Obama worshippers. His proposal for the Democrat Party platform for 2020 is reportedly seeking to put an end to America's suburban communities by forcing low-income housing into every neighborhood, flooding every community with immigrants, legal or not, according to Breitbart News. And there's more. He is using terminology used by Barack Obama in order to give confidence to the Barack Obama worshiper. And I use the term worshiper because, well, if you've spent any time around people who are big fans of Barack Obama, it's like idolatry. It's very strange how much they love this guy who really was not and is not who or what they think he is. He was a figurehead put in place by the Democrat Party who had handlers with him at all times. And for his entire first administration, the first 4 years he was in office, he never spoke in public without teleprompters. And there were times when teleprompters broke where he just stood there until they were fixed. Go look for the video if you can still find it. And Joe Biden could be almost a vegetable. And as long as he could read from a teleprompter, he would be able to be president for the Democrats. Because there would be someone much like Valerie Jarrett with him at all times. And so when he says things like,
I truly think that if we do this right, we have an incredible opportunity to not just dig out of this crisis, but to fundamentally transform the country so that it's more fair, more just, more equitable for everybody.
He is playing directly to those who still lovingly adore Barack Obama and miss him. And they're hoping that a Joe Biden presidency will be a continuation of the Obama presidency. Well, his proposal, which has reportedly been donned as the Biden-Sanders Unity Task Force recommendations, would provide amnesty and ultimately citizenship for the 22 million illegal aliens now living in the United States. According to Fox News, the proposal would also provide legal status to all the world's refugees, regardless of the legitimacy of their claim to the status. The executive orders section reads, quote, implement the Obama-Biden administration's affirmatively furthering fair housing rule, requiring communities receiving certain federal funding to proactively examine housing patterns and identify and address policies that have discriminatory effects. In other words, look at every subdivision in America and determine whether or not they meet their quotas. In other words, if you chose to live in a subdivision because you spent some time researching it, decided it was close to the school you wanted your kids to go to, the houses were the kind of houses you liked, people took care of their lawns, and whatever criteria you may have, just because it was conveniently located for you, for where you work, for your kids in the school you want them to be in, etc. That's wrong. That's all white supremacy. And it will not be allowed anymore. You will be forced in your community to have people living there whose housing is subsidized by the government. And I encourage you to roll up your windows and lock your doors and go drive around an area of your town where the housing is subsidized by the government and ask yourself, is that what you had in mind? In another section, the platform states Biden would, quote, ensure effective and rigorous enforcement of the Fair Housing Act and the Home Mortgage Disclosure Act, hold financial institutions accountable for discriminatory practices in the housing market. Let me translate that for you. That means that in a Biden administration, lending institutions will be forced to approve mortgage loans for people who cannot and will not make their house payments. Oh, Mark, that's not fair. It's completely fair. Because that is exactly what caused the housing bubble that we're still recovering from, to be honest with you. When Democrats decided it was unfair that certain people they wanted to vote for them couldn't get a home loan because they didn't pay their bills. That's what the credit score is all about. It tells lenders whether you're trustworthy, whether they can trust you with large sums of money. And if your credit score says no, they're not going to take a chance on you because they know they're probably not going to get paid back. And if you remember what happened in the housing bubble, lenders were forced to make loans. They then sold those loans to other companies. And those institutions took over those loans, and in many cases, they sold them to other companies. So the original lenders no longer had that mortgage loan. It got shopped out 2, 3, 4, who knows how many times. And finally, the people holding the loans were not the original people required to make the loan in the first place. They were some company who was taking a chance on a bad loan and hoping they could make some money off of it. And it didn't matter if they did or didn't, because they had no compunction whatsoever about foreclosing if they needed to, because they knew they could resell the property. That is how that all worked out. With a longer explanation, the platform states the following. Democrats will vigorously enforce the Fair Housing Act and the Home Mortgage Disclosure Act and hold lenders accountable for discriminatory practices. Now, discriminatory practices means discerning, means looking at the record, the payment record of the person applying for the loan. That's discriminatory. No, it's not. It's good business. Moving forward, we will use the federal government to enforce settlements against discriminatory lenders and require communities to proactively review housing patterns and remedy local policies that have a discriminatory effect. Democrats will give local elected officials tools and resources to combat gentrification, penalized predatory lending practices, and maintain home ownership, including exploring targeted rental relief when exorbitant rent increases force long-term residents from their communities, and tackling persistent racial bias in appeals, in appraisals that contributes to the racial wealth gap. Now, all of this legalese, this gobbledygook, is basically just saying they're going to force business to do what they want, regardless of how it affects the business. Carlson said, the Tucker Carlson, by the way, said the Biden platform would make the rest of America very much like our biggest cities have become: squalid, dangerous, chaotic, and unhappy. They'd like to do to your neighborhood what they've done to New York City. The main thing they've done to New York is make it scary. Violent crime is surging dramatically there. None of the main reasons for that is the elimination of cash. One of the main reasons is the elimination of cash bail. The city no longer holds people after it arrests them. Democrats want to abolish the suburbs. They are too clean and nice, and therefore, by definition, they're racist. Racist. If you live in the suburbs, you're a racist. The Biden campaign has highly specific plans on how to do this. Affirmative housing, affirmative action, for housing. They are going to fundamentally transform the United States of America again. You just need to understand that that's what Joe Biden wants. His platform is being crafted by people like Bernie Sanders and AOC. It's not just insane, it's scary. And that's just one of the reasons Joe Biden should never be elected president. It doesn't matter that he's mentally incapable. They'll take care of that. It's everything else that's dangerous for America. And that's all for today. God bless you. Have a good one. Let's meet back here tomorrow for the Wednesday edition. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.